dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. It is always a delight to explore and take advantage of the incredible intelligence of our first guest, Trevor Loudon, a renowned author and filmmaker who has specialized really in warning America about the threat posed to it by Marxists, communists, socialists, social democrats, progressives, whatever you want to call them, whatever they call themselves, who have a common objective, which is the mutation beyond recognition and ultimately the destruction of the United States of America. You can find his work at trevorloudon.com and check out in particular his book and film, the same name, The Enemies Within. It's good to have you with us, Trevor Loudon. Thank you so much for joining us, as always.
Oh, look, it's always a pleasure, Frank. Thanks very much for having me.
So I wanted to catch up with you in particular in the wake of a very interesting piece that 60 Minutes aired over the weekend, and in particular the prominent role that it gave to a man who is clearly deeply knowledgeable about and very worried concerning what the Chinese Communist Party is doing inside America. His name is Bill Evanina, and he was until recently the director of the Counterintelligence and Security Center. I gather you didn't see the video, but Trevor, suffice it to say, it warns not just about the theft by the Chinese Communist Party of our DNA, but more generally, what the CCP is up to in America in terms of subversion and espionage and intellectual property theft and the like. I'd like to just ask you, based on your extensive research into Marxists of the Chinese stripe with Chinese characteristics, as they like to say, but more generally, what is their grand design for the United States?
Well, their grand design is the destruction of the United States and the eventual occupation of North America by their people. A lot of commentators think this is all about economic domination. This is an economic competition, and that's part of it. But this is really the great game. You know, the Communist Party of China knows that either America or they are going to dominate this planet. And they are very serious about making it them. And we need to wake up to that. Otherwise, we will lose.
We will lose. Talk a little bit about some of the tools that they've used successfully to date, the Chinese Communist Party, and their united front groups in this country, Trevor, toward that, ultimate defeat of this country.
Well, I've used virtually everything you can think of. They have groups like the Committee of 100, which is about 180 leading Chinese-American businessmen, intellectual figures, and cultural figures, now led by Gary Locke, who was Obama's ambassador to China and the former governor of Washington State. They use those people to do massive influence operations on American politicians and business leaders. But on the street level, they are very heavily involved in Black Lives Matter, for instance. You know, the mass rioting that occurred all over America, there's strong evidence that that was coordinated, at least partially, out of the Chinese consulate in San Francisco. And the same groups behind Black Lives Matter also ran mass voter registration organizations amongst the Black and Latino communities that they had already been agitating in key targeted states like Wisconsin and Georgia and Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, the states that were decisive in the election. So
it seems to be a pretty high correlation there between the efforts they've been making and the contested states in the 2020 presidential race. No?
Look, absolutely. They've had this model going for some time. They started out in Virginia. They've got their own communist, pro-Chinese communist groups here, like Liberation Road and Freedom Road Socialist Organization. And these are the people behind Black Lives Matter. And they are the people that burnt many American cities. But they also have voter registration organizations like New Virginia Majority, Black Leaders Organizing Communities in Wisconsin, the New Georgia Project in Georgia. And they claim credit, openly claim credit for flipping 6 of the key swing states of the 7 they targeted for Biden, the Biden-Harris.
So this constitutes rather direct interference in our election process, needless to say. Among the other techniques that you've enumerated here, Trevor Loudon, that constitute what I guess they would call unrestricted warfare against the United States in pursuit of people's war, which they've also declared. Would it surprise you, Trevor Loudon, given all of this and given your knowledge of sort of the far-reaching efforts they're making to take us down, if this piece in 60 Minutes leads to the conclusion that Gordon Chang gave us yesterday on this program, that the Chinese may be tapping into this incredible data stream about Americans and their personal DNA composition and other personal medical data to engineer biological weapons for the purpose of accomplishing basically what you said they were all about in your comments a moment ago, not only depopulating this country, but taking it over and colonizing it.
Look, I think we can take that for granted. You know, we're hearing that these DNA companies are selling data to the Chinese, and this is supposed to be an economic problem. This is way more than an economic problem. The Chinese have a major biological weapons program. If they have America's DNA, they can target their biological weapons even towards certain minorities or ethnic groups or certain areas of the country. And if we don't think they'll use that against us, I've got a bridge in Brooklyn I can sell you if you're interested.
Listen, just very quickly, we got 30 seconds left, Trevor. Would you say that the appearance of the COVID-19, I call it the CCP virus, may well have been a dress rehearsal of sorts for this kind of attack against us?
Look, 100%. That was designed to basically bring down the president and destroy the economy, to destroy the U.S. military budget. And that was a disease with a 1% death rate. You imagine a disease with a 20% death rate or a 30% death rate. Imagine what that would do to this country.
Yeah, and there may be some of those in store for us in the Wuhan Institute of Virology and elsewhere in that biological weapons complex. Trevor Loudon, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you so much for your insights as well as your great expertise, your contributions, among other things, to the Committee on the Present Danger, China, for which I'm particularly grateful. We'll talk with you again soon, my friend. Thank you for your time today. Next up, we'll speak with Captain James Fennell. We'll back the lens up a bit further on the Chinese military capabilities, including these asymmetric ones, and what they might mean for all of us.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back, and a special welcome to Captain James Fennell, United States Navy retired, one of our most distinguished naval intelligence officers who capped a career of over 30 years in the United States Navy as the assistant for intelligence in the U.S. Pacific Fleet. He's deeply knowledgeable about some of the threats we've been talking about with China and the implications of the immense buildup that China is undergoing at the moment. He's been warning about it for decades, and I always value the opportunity to sort of update, take stock with him as to what's the latest and what it might mean for all of us. Captain Fennell, it's so good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Thanks, Frank. Glad to be back with you.
So we were talking a moment ago with Trevor Loudon about this sort of grand designs of the Chinese Communist Party on this country and the world. Talk, if you would, about how the Chinese People's Liberation Army's military doctrine and program fit into this larger ambition of dominating the world.
Well, Frank, the Chinese Communist Party employs what they call comprehensive national power, comprehensive national strength to achieve their strategic goals, which is to right now simply to say that they want to be the world superpower and control all the levers of power. And so they have the entire Communist Party, 9 million of them, working towards, propaganda warfare, information warfare, economic warfare, diplomatic warfare. And then they have the PLA, which is, as Mao said, that's the power. The real power is the gun. And so the PLA is brought into this comprehensive national scheme to basically have the capability to achieve the objectives that they can't achieve through nonviolent means. And so what you're seeing over the last 20 years is this development and buildup of the PLA military across the board, and a restructuring of the military, using and adopting and stealing everything that the United States has built and developed over the last 100 years, and especially in the joint arena and the space forces and cyber forces. And then they acquired enough hard power with strategic rocket force and things, the Navy and the Air Forces, to be able to achieve the number one goal that they have, which is to bring Taiwan into total control. And while they may not want to use military force, the military has been ordered to have that capability. And they basically, since last year, had the foundations of that capability, and they continue to perfect it and use their forces, as we've seen here in the month of January, as Biden's come into office, to threaten Taiwan even more than they have in 2019 and 2020.
With presumably, would you say, the ambition, if need be, to use military force to accomplish the seizure of the island and the enslavement of its people?
Oh, yes. The PLA is definitely operating under the rubric that they will be doing this operation. I mean, we can debate about it in the United States, and many people poo-poo the idea, but if you're in the PLA, you've been working towards this for two decades. And so what you see in the actual practice is the PLA going through and testing all the elements of what it would take to conduct an invasion and occupation of Taiwan and the 24 million people that live there. And so when you see PLA bombers, making mock runs at not only just Taiwan and crossing the center line, but also making mock attack runs against U.S. aircraft carriers in the South China Sea, or launching anti-carrier ballistic missiles like they did last August, moving vessels in the South China Sea. These are all actions that are all part of a grand strategy that fits into the PLA's war planning effort, and they're testing each and every element of it. And we may not see all the tests at once, but all of these elements or all these activities that we see in bits and pieces, we need to connect those dots together to use the 9/11 Commission. The failure to not understand that terrorists were going to attack the trade towers in the Pentagon was because we weren't piecing together disparate pieces of information. We have the same understanding.
Jim Fennell, as a seasoned intelligence analyst, you, of course, look for what's called indicators and warnings. And what I'm hearing you say is that if you connect the proverbial dots, basically everything that they would need to pull off this kind of presumably very little notice attack on Taiwan is now being not only put into place, but is being exercised. Is that right?
Yeah, the amount of activity that the PLA has made in the last, since Xi's been president for the last 8 years, is incredible. The amount of military operations that we see that the Chinese operating in. If you just look at last year, the Chinese sent a surface action group of four or five warships that did a comprehensive air defense drill, this time east of the international dateline. And when they went and cross the international dateline, they were in a heightened combat-ready state, in general quarters, as we would say. And then they launched, they had their own drones, and they used those drones to launch attacks, simulated attacks against the ships in order to defend themselves against what they would expect to be American aircraft attacking them. And I point that out because it was east of the international dateline, closer to Hawaii than it was closer to Guam. And I make that point, which is because 10 years ago or 20 years ago, people would laugh and scoff that there was an idea that the Chinese Navy would even consider conducting warfare, naval warfare, anywhere outside of the first island chain, that first set of islands that are just off of China's coast, about 400 or 500 miles. That used to be the standard of where we thought China would operate and fight. And now, in the last 10, 15 years, people started to say, well, maybe we're going to have to fight them between the first and second island chain, which is the Ryukyu Islands out to Guam, that string of islands that comes around from Japan. And that was kind of stretching people's minds in the United States intelligence community. But I'm here to tell you, China is developing a navy and air forces and rocket forces and space forces and cyber forces that want to fight and take Hawaii and be off of our West Coast.
Jim Fennell, let me hit you with four other topics very quickly. This is a lightning round. Asymmetric warfare. We were talking with Trevor Loudon a little bit about the threat of biological warfare. We'll talk about it more with Mark Schneider in a moment. And the possibility that the Chinese could use their penetration of our electric grid as a means of attack against this country as well. Your thoughts on both?
Yeah, I think the biowarfare issue is something that's very real. China has, obviously, we know about the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the PLA's involvement in that. And so I think it's something that, I don't think we're going to find any ground truth now that the World Health Organization's team of scientists show up a year after the outbreak. But I think there's a lot of evidence out there. Yeah, the trail is cold and the evidence has been eradicated. But I think it's going to leave a lot of questions in people's mind about when you look at the Chinese concept of, total war, people's war. We have to consider that this kind of activity could be used against us, and we need to be prepared for it.
And we may have seen a dress rehearsal. Yeah,
right. That 60 Minutes show last night, I think, makes the case that some of this stuff is very dangerous to us.
Indeed. And the grid?
Yeah, the electric grid is clearly another area where China would obviously want to shut down the ability of our military to be able to power up jet aircraft or get ships sent to sea or mobilize personnel. And they know that we're dependent upon our own satellite constellations for intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance information. So turning off the electrical power grid in certain areas would blank out our military potentially, and not to mention what it could do to civilian population.
The incalculable harm to our civilians and economy, of course, as well. Jim, thirdly, the Bahamas are a new theater of operations. You're talking about the Chinese being a threat to Hawaii. They would be a threat to the mainland, particularly from the east, if they were to utilize, as they are wont to do, facilities that they've been building out as part of this Belt and Road Initiative for power projection, including in the immediate proximity, as I understand it, to one of our most sensitive underwater test ranges there in the Bahamas. Your thoughts about the implications of this development?
I think, Frank, that the Chinese as we've mentioned earlier, this idea of total control of the world in a sense of everywhere they're going to be. And so when we hear these reports that the Chinese Minister of Defense has expressed his, willingness to work with and cooperate with the militaries of the Caribbean, we saw a couple of years ago the Chinese sent their first hospital ship there and spent 3 or 4 months in the Caribbean. And now we're getting reports about an expanded Chinese naval facility. Maybe it's just for civilian use right now, but in the Bahamas and the Freeport, this is very worrisome because, as you mentioned, the United States Submarine Force of the Atlantic Fleet operates in these waters. And the idea that China has got, ships operating in and out of there, as well as what we hear about their oceanographic research ships operating in the South Atlantic, the idea that Chinese submarines could be operating off the U.S. East Coast is not far-fetched.
Nope, and coming distraction, I guess I might call it. Very quickly, Myanmar, anything to worry about in the coup there in terms of Chinese involvement or benefit from it?
Well, I think China was very unhappy with the relationships that the United States had with Myanmar, Burma over the last 10, 15 years, and they've been trying to bring them back into their control. They didn't like some of the freedom and activities that were democracy types of movements that were being pushed in Burma. And I think it would make sense that China wants to control that. And also, it's another chance for Xi and the Chinese Communist Party to do another test of this new administration and to see how they respond to China's overt actions or covert actions, more likely, in that nation, and to see how we respond to a country that says we're not going to play in the international order and we're not going to follow previous agreements that we had with the United States in terms of democratization and the fair treatment of a minority like the Rohingya and stuff.
We'll be watching it closely. Jim Fennell, as I know will you, at the Geneva Center for Security Policy. Thank you for your time today, my friend, and for your great service to our country. I know you'll keep it up. We'll come back to you again very soon. Next up, we will be speaking with Mark Schneider. Dr. Schneider is an expert on nuclear threats, and we'll talk about that of Russia as well as China. Straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Dr. Mark Schneider, a man whose corporate memory about our nuclear forces, the threats we're facing from those of our adversaries, and the role that arms control has played over the years in, well, leaving us increasingly vulnerable to nuclear attack and ill-prepared to deter such threats. His experience is extensive. I had the privilege of working with him a lifetime ago in the Pentagon. He continued long after I left, serving in senior ranks there in the Defense Department. He was also a Foreign Service officer and time on Capitol Hill, I believe. An extraordinary national resource on the matters in which he is deeply expert. And he is these days providing that expertise to an outstanding organization, the National Institute for Public Policy. Mark Schneider, it's good to have you back. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes.
Well, thank you for having me on and for the kind introduction.
Let us start with the New START Treaty, which has just been extended for 5 years pursuant to one of Joe Biden's first actions in office with Vladimir Putin. Mark, I know you have been a critic of New START in the past. What are we to make of this extension and its implications for our nuclear deterrent and security?
Well, it's a very bad decision. The New START Treaty is clearly the worst arms control agreement since Ronald Reagan became president. It's loaded with loopholes. It's got a grossly defective verification regime. It has what I would characterize as a placebo effect. It creates the illusion of arms control without having any real arms control there. The fact that they did it, on the basis of ideology, they extended it a few days after getting into office for a maximum duration of 5 years. They didn't have to do that, and the effect of it is to drastically reduce, as Robert Suffer, who was the Deputy Assistant Secretary under the Trump administration, the Pentagon had the arms control, nuclear, and missile defense responsibility. He said this is a very bad decision. It makes it very unlikely they're ever going to get a follow-on arms control agreement, because basically they gave the Russians exactly what the Russians wanted on arms control, something that's not very restrictive and has a lot of loopholes and not verifiable and allows them to cheat when necessary. So they eliminated whatever leverage we had. And that's remarkable in that Biden was vice president, of course, under Obama. And for 6 years after they concluded the New START treaty. They basically begged the Russians to get involved in new arms control, and they got turned down every time they made that request. And the reason was they weren't willing to use any leverage against the Russians, and the Russians don't want arms control unless it's ineffective, unverifiable, and they can cheat when necessary.
Yeah. Knowing as well, Mark, and I think you are perhaps the foremost expert on this point in the country today, knowing, as the Russians do, that these agreements will be faithfully followed by us, and typically are more than restrictive according to their terms. They do have, as you say, this placebo effect. They persuade particularly administrations of the left, like Joe Biden's, that, well, we don't really need to be busily and expensively investing in our modernization of truly obsolescent nuclear forces. So all of this comes together in a way that's we win, you lose, you know, from the Russians' point of view, as opposed to, you know, what Ronald Reagan used to be thinking in terms of taking down the Soviet Union, right?
Yes, I think that's very much the case.
So, Mark, how is this likely to affect our nuclear forces, and how, if at all, is it likely to restrain the immense buildup that you've talked about on this program many times that the Russians have engaged in terms of their strategic, to say nothing of tactical, nuclear forces?
Well, there won't be any direct effects on U.S. forces beyond what we've lived on with since the 2011 entry into force of New START. What will be used in any political debate, and there's going to be wholesale attacks on U.S. modernization programs, particularly from the left in the Congress, though I suspect they will also see some significant cuts from the administration itself, which in reality will be cuts not from the Trump program, but cuts from what the Obama-Biden program was before the 2016 election. So
we're smaller baseline than Trump had.
Well, Trump basically took the Obama program modernization and improved it in certain important respects. But numerically, it was the same. They didn't increase the number. As far as I know, they didn't increase the number of nuclear warheads we were going to deploy. What these people are likely to do is reduce the number we plan on deploying. They will initially try to get the Russians to sign a new agreement. The Russians will either not negotiate it at all or tell them no on anything that would have significant new reductions, and they will oppose effective verification. I mean, if there's one thing that has been consistent since beginning of arms control, modern arms control in 1969 in the Nixon administration, was that the Russians always want minimum limitations, minimum verification, and plenty of loopholes and things to get around the limitations are, and they will continue that for the foreseeable future.
And they will take advantage of all of the above to their benefit. Yeah, a lot of cheating.
Cheating is certain.
Mark, two other quick points that I want to get to with you before we run out of time. China, of course, is not constrained by the New START agreement. One of the things the Trump administration was trying to do was to get them into some sort of arms control framework that might shed more light on their actual nuclear capabilities and theoretically, at least, constrain the threat posed from that quarter. Didn't happen. What are the implications for us that the Chinese have a complete pass on all of this?
Well, it's very serious. In the first place, China is clearly getting ready for a major war in the Far East. Constant provocations now against the Taiwanese, and they may see the existence of the Biden administration as a window of opportunity with regard to settling the Taiwan issue once and for all. A few months ago, I wrote an article appeared in Real Clear Defense, which basically documented the inconsistencies in the Pentagon report on China's nuclear capability, and I argued that the Chinese probably have at least five times as many nuclear warheads as we're giving them credit for. And
which would make it over 1,000.
Yes. A few days ago, the South China Morning Post, which is a major publication in the Far East, quoted a source in China close to the Chinese military, saying that they have 1,000 nuclear weapons today. So that's about half of the operational U.S. force, as best as I can determine based on what's been publicly released.
And that's likely to be a lowball, too, would be my guess, actually.
Well, yeah.
If they're admitting it, you could bet.
Yeah. I doubt that they released the real number. They just released one. And look, nobody in his right mind in the communist dictatorship is going to put out a statement about the number of nuclear warheads communist China has, unless that's been sanctioned by the Communist Party. So I take this as a quasi-official declaration of what their capabilities are.
Right, or at least what they want us to know are their capabilities today, which perhaps has something to do with the deterrent that they hope to pose to our intervention on behalf of Taiwan or anybody else that they may be targeting in the Far East, or indeed our own forces for that matter. Mark, let me turn to one last thing quickly. I've been talking with some of our previous guests about the Biological Weapons Convention and violations thereof. Of particular concern, of course, of late is the Chinese Communist Party's biological weapons capability, which seems to have had something to do with this outbreak of COVID-19. Very quickly, what are the problems with that convention, and how seriously disadvantaged are we by what's going on despite it?
Well, we unilaterally eliminated our biological weapons capability in the Nixon administration. We then went ahead and negotiated the Biological Weapons Convention. It's manifestly unverifiable. It's simply conceptually unverifiable. And there's a significant amount of evidence that both the Russians and Chinese have covert biological weapons, chemical weapons capability. The one thing we should have learned from the China virus or COVID-19, whatever you want to call it, is that the use of biological weapons could have devastating effects on the United States. COVID-19 is not a real biological weapon, despite its lethality compared to ordinary versions of the flu. It's not nearly as lethal as what a genetically engineered biological weapon would likely be.
That could be in store for us, unfortunately. Mark Schneider, we have to leave it at that. Thank you for your time today and your extraordinary service to our country over the years in government as well as now at the National Institute for Public Policy. I know you'll keep it up and come back to us again soon, if you would. Next up, we'll speak with former Command Sergeant Major of the United States Army, Mike Mabee, about China in our electric grid. What could possibly go wrong? That and more, straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back, and it is my distinct honor to have with us Command Sergeant Major of the United States Army, Michael Mabee, now retired, who has gone on in his private sector life, to become one of our duty experts at the Secure the Grid Coalition, and the author of a terrific book about the need for preparedness by individuals as well as communities, entitled The Civil Defense Book. which is a prescription for how suburban and rural communities can protect themselves against eventualities like our grid going down. Mike Mabey, it's so good to have you with us, sir. Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Great to be back, Frank. Thank you.
We had a terrific interview with you yesterday on our new television program, Securing America, and I wanted to reprise some of the things that we talked about there, Mike, because I think what you've warned about in terms of Chinese penetration of our grid is of the utmost importance, especially in light of what we've heard from our previous guests about the potential use of such penetration, such vulnerabilities that have flowed from it to advance the Chinese agenda of taking this country down. Start, if you would, Mike, with the executive order that Donald Trump issued last year aimed at trying to prevent new foreign-made equipment from being introduced into our electric grid, and whether that was primarily aimed at the Chinese communists.
Right. So in May of last year, the president issued an executive order on the supply chain cybersecurity. And what that means is that we have been using parts for our critical infrastructures, particularly our electric grid, that have come from foreign adversaries. So this executive order was meant to put a stop to that. So in other words, if we're going to import parts for the electric grid, they shouldn't come from countries like Russia or China, you know, that are adversaries to the United States. So
seems like such a complete no-brainer. It's hard to believe that you'd need an order like that. But the problem is, as I understand it, Mike, that not only do we have the problem of prospectively putting such gear in our grid, but both the Russians and especially the Chinese seemingly have already got such stuff in it. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. Since 2006, the United States has imported 300 large power transformers from China. At least 200 of them that we know about are attached to our critical infrastructures right now. And this became a problem. There was a Wall Street Journal report that came out last year about one of these transformers that was seized by the federal government and brought to Sandia National Laboratory. And, you know, the federal government doesn't just seize a multi-million dollar transformer that somebody's paid for and bring it to a national laboratory unless they think there's a problem. So then, you know, fast forward a little bit, you know, after we found out about that transformer being seized, and then we had the SolarWinds hack, which is another supply chain cybersecurity problem. So we've got not only a problem with foreign-made equipment that could have built-in backdoors or, you know, things installed in it that shouldn't be there that would allow an adversary to harm us or turn off our electric grid. But then also, as SolarWinds demonstrated, we've got a, and that was believed to originate from Russia. You know, we have a supply chain cybersecurity software in addition, you know, to hardware problem. And both Russia and China are presently exploiting that to find vulnerabilities.
So, Mike, let me just ask you to tease out what the implications of this all are. If the Russians and Chinese not only have access to our electric grid, but have equipment or software in it, this would conceivably enable them to engage in destruction of such assets to the perhaps catastrophic effect on the power supply to our country. And Jim Fennell was talking about the implications of that for the military, but also alluded to the civilian sector. How dramatic might those effects be?
That could be catastrophic. So when we're talking about these large power transformers, they cannot easily be replaced. They're the backbone of the electric grid. And in normal times, it takes, you know, between a year to 18 months to replace one of them. You know, if you lose several of them, then you have a protracted blackout over large swaths of the country that could last for a long period of time. Now, we are completely unprepared for a large-scale blackout, long-term blackout. And the human toll of such a thing, you know, has been pointed out, numerous federal reports would be catastrophic. We could be talking about tens of thousands or millions of people who could perish in a long-term blackout.
Well, to put a fine point on it, the chairman of the Congressional Blue Ribbon Commission that was asked to look at this phenomenon of electromagnetic pulse and the threat that it posed to the grid estimated that if it's a year without power, 90% of the U.S. population wouldn't make it. So this isn't just, you know, a coronavirus scale problem, bad as that's been. This would be vastly worse. So when you look at these 300 large transformers or extremely high voltage transformers that the Chinese have supplied to our grid, it sounds as though finding them and removing them should be an urgent priority. And yet it would not be something that could be done very quickly. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. And one of the problems is, you know, for those who don't realize that the electric grid isn't just one thing owned by one company or controlled by the government. There are around 3,000 different companies involved in pieces of the electric grid. So these transformers are scattered all over numerous, you know, different companies might own them or operate them. And there is no requirement, absolutely no requirement right now that anybody do anything about this. So the executive order that the previous president had signed, which now has been suspended, was only a forward-looking order. You know, we won't import any new ones. But the existing ones that are there, there's absolutely no requirement that anybody even take a look at them. And that is a huge problem that we need to overcome.
Well, and you mentioned Joe Biden has this executive order that suspended even that sensible precautionary step. It's under review, we're told, for the next 90 days by the Department of Energy and the Office of Management and Budget. And I know that you and our colleague, Lieutenant Colonel Tommy Waller, United States Marines Reserve, has helped put together a 107-page memorandum initially for the Trump administration, but I think it's needed by the Biden administration now, needless to say, to improve upon President Trump's executive order. And that needs to be done right quick because, as you said, Command Sergeant Major Mike Mabee, this is a present danger that has to be fixed. And yet, interestingly enough, we're not hearing that so much from the electric utilities themselves or their lobbying organizations, the Edison Electric Institute and the Electric Power Research Institute. And on our show yesterday, you explained why that may be. Tell our audience what's up with those groups.
Okay, well, the electric utility industry we have found is one of the biggest problems towards electric grid security, as counterintuitive as that sounds. But over the past 10 years, the electric utility industry has spent $1.2 billion with a B, billion dollars lobbying the federal, Congress, the House of Representatives and the Senate. And largely, whenever a bill gets introduced that may provide security for the electric grid, the electric utility lobby will come out against it and lobby against it. In addition to the lobbying money, they've also made contributions of $149.5 million over the last 10 years, most of it going to the Senate and the House Energy Committees, which are the key committees that might have the authority to pass legislation to protect the grid.
But very quickly, what about the Russians and the Chinese inside these organizations? Could that be contributing to this desire to just leave everything as it is, vulnerabilities and all?
Yes, it could. So one of the big lobbying groups is Edison Electric Institute, and two of their members are actually companies, Chinese companies, controlled by the People's Republic of China. Two of the dues-paying members of Edison Electric Institute, and one of them actually won an Edison Electric Institute award a while back. So the electric utility industry has, you know, within its lobbying organizations, the People's Republic of China. And although that is all perfectly legal under U.S. law, one would think there should be a problem with the very countries that are hacking us being involved in thwarting grid security in Congress.
I should say so. Mike, maybe we have to leave it at that. Thank you for your time today, sir, as well as your great service to our country over a very distinguished distinguished career in uniform, as well as now with our Secure the Grid Coalition. I know you'll keep it up. I hope you come back to us again soon, and that the rest of you will do the same. Again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.